All lines are now bridged.
Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday and last day of June. Oh, my gosh. Welcome to the ICAT Task Force. The members that I have either on Adobe on the phone, Cheryl Turney, Alex Goss, Alexis Snyder, Emil Jane, Deb Strickland, Denise Webb, Gus Gerarcy, Jim Jurgis, Mary Green, Rich Landon, Sasha Termont, Steve Brown, and Tom Mason. Are there any other members that are on the phone?
Ram Sriram.
Hello, Ram. Anyone else? Great. With that, I am going to turn it over to Cheryl, I believe, for our summary and action plan review.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Lauren. Today we have a process mapping conversation that we're going to begin, and then also we've got Alex stepping up today. She's going to be presenting the prior authorization recommendations, brainstorming that. There's a small group that's been going on, so we're very excited to hear that. We'll have public comment and then next steps. So let's go to the next slide. It's fabulous. So I just wanted to give a brief recap from our last meeting. If you can recall, in our last meeting, we had several representatives from CAQH Core who made a presentation, or actually that was April Todd that made the presentation from CAQH Core, and she presented an overview of the new operating rules that apply to prior authorization transactions and included some highlights from the 2019 CAQH Core Index Report on Medical Industry Electronic Transaction Adoptions, as well as they presented some barriers to industry adoption of the electronic prior authorization, and also they went over processes to identify closing automation gaps through changes to operating rules. So that was very wonderful conversation, and we had a great discussion afterwards. And then we had HEMA come in with three different presenters who all gave us a perspective of their background for the last century in terms of helping to improve health record quality by taking a leadership role in the effective management of health data and information and delivering quality health care to the public. They had some very interesting slides that presented some information, and also their slide that really focused on issues beyond automation generated a lot of good discussion from our team here. So with that, let's move over to the next slide. So we're going to begin the process model conversation, and in order to do that for you today, we have a representative of one of the small groups that we've been dealing with, Robert, who is going to be Robert Lario, who's going to be presenting this fabulous process model that they put together. He did a very great explanation for us in the small group. So if you have questions, please feel free. We allotted enough time today for them to present this model that they put together, as well as some background in terms of how to read it, and then also in terms of generating conversation. Because at the end of the day, the most important factor about the process model is that not that we get a process model perfect, because there's lots of groups trying to do that. The intent is to use this process model so that we can take our recommendations and our ideal state and our guiding principles and be able to use those to look at this process model, sort of test the model, if you will, and say, you know, is this valid? Is this right? Does it help us in terms of validating the recommendations and the guidance that we're going to be providing, and is that valid? Because, as you all know, this is very complicated. We cannot present a particular process that's inherent to a specific EMR system, nor an administrative system. So we have to present a model that can work within the parameters of really what the landscape is. And if we group the landscape, as I've defined it, and maybe I'll explain that to you for 1 second before I turn it over to Robert, is that there's really three levels of providers that we sort of see if we group them together. One level that has an EMR system with CDS hooks, which is actually the capability that allows them to utilize APIs. And then there's EMR systems that don't have that capability. And then there are providers and systems that actually don't really have EMR systems to speak of. They have systems that support specific aspects like billing or their X12 transactions, but it really wouldn't be considered an EMR system. And we can't focus on, you know, that broad spectrum, of course, because at the end of the day, we're trying to focus on how can we enable interoperability and interoperability rules in order to have the greatest benefit to that entire landscape. So we want to acknowledge that that landscape exists, and then we want to utilize the tools that we're creating to say, will the recommendations that Alex will talk about a little bit later live within the realm of what we know is currently out there and who can take advantage of it? So any questions about that overview? All right, now I'm going to turn it over to Robert.
Cheryl, this is Alex, and I could just add a little additional commentary. I think that I want to link today's presentation that's being queued up right now. As Robert's sharing his screen, we want to just link this to our prior discussion with the data classes and categories discussion and some of the thought process that Steve Brown brought us from the VA realm about how do we really get our arms around the larger business process model. And I'm really excited for today's discussion, and we certainly do not want to cut it short if we don't have to. We will be diving into some straw man recommendations that we've started in a small group, but it will just be a starting point for brainstorming. So I think it's a really great point that you make, Cheryl, in that this business process model is the launch off point for so many other pieces coming together that we've been working on for the last few months. It also enables us to then have a solid foundation for us to pivot from prior authorization to the larger conversation as we move through the month of July. So I appreciate your discussion about the levels and all the efforts of the small working group.
Thank you, Alex. Anyone else have any questions before we move on? Robert, I think you're going to have to enlarge your screen a little bit, because even if I enlarge this, I can't really read it. But you might want to talk about it in total first, but I'm going to turn it over to you.
I think someone else had a question before I start.
This is Steve, Steve Brown from VA. So what I wanted to say is that this is this work grew out of a use scenario that Josh pulled together for us, and Robert has spent some amount of time both with me and with the small group trying to pull together a representative model. I think my hopes for this is for you all to get just sort of the basic familiarity with form representative modeling methods to see what they can offer. I think it puts what we've been talking about in context, and also allows you to know at various stages what information requirements there may be, what documents may be going back and forth. So there are great ways of trying to pull together all these things we've been talking about as a group and putting them into the context of an overall process rather than like a spreadsheet that is agnostic as to where any of this gets deployed. So understand that, you know, we did this time box. We were, you know, limited in effort, so we didn't intend this to be a perfect thing, but it's, I think, meant to be a an organizing framework for some of the group's activities. I'll let Robert pick up from there.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. My name is Robert Lario. I'm with the University of Utah and the Veterans Administration. I work for Dr. Brown. As Dr. Brown said, we were given a scenario that was a Word document and asked to show how we might use these methods that we call BPM Plus to express the same information but using these open standards. BPM Plus is business process management. It's a term that was coined through the Object Management Group. These are open standards. The method on the screen is called Business Process Modeling Notation. It's an open standard. It's available to anybody. It's free. There are many tools that implement this. There's a lot of documentation, a lot of classes and all if anybody was interested in pursuing these methods. It's a visual notation. BPM Plus has three different methods. The first one is the process modeling, which I'm showing you now. In a moment, I'm going to show you decision modeling notation. There is a third, which we won't go into, called case modeling notation. We are actively pursuing other specifications to extend the BPM Plus family to allow us to better articulate clinical knowledge. This particular method focuses on process knowledge. The left, this is a tool by Trizotech. As I said, there are other tools like Commenda and Synovia and NoMagic and Sparks. They're all different vendors. I didn't want to confuse the vendor's implementation with the actual notation. The notation here on the left is a palette you can choose from. The primary things we work with are called tasks. Tasks are where things happen and get done. There are different types of tasks. There are gateways where we express the branching as a result of something that's happened upstream. And there are events that either occur or are caught to help a process move forward. There are other aspects of the language, but I'm not going to go into them. I will zoom in. I just want to show you that based on the document that was provided, we put down what we call pools. These are these long rectangular boxes. They are meant to represent an entity, a thing, a system, a person that is performing some activity and interacting with other pools. Just to give you a bird's eye view, up here we've got a patient. Here is the provider pool. We introduced this intermediate pool that addresses the process that supports the requesting of the authorization for a particular procedure. And then down below is the pool that we use to express perhaps what a payer might do. We don't expect this model to be correct. It was a first cut at expressing what we found in the Word document. One thing that's nice about this, it's an iterative process. You create an initial model. You work through with your subject matter experts. You step through it. You remediate, make changes, update. We don't believe this is correct. It's just a first attempt to sort of get the conversation going. And our goal was to introduce these methods as possibly a way of expressing the information that you all are working with. So I'm gonna zoom in and try to make it a little bit bigger for you all. And let me pull it up even more. I have a very high resolution screen, so hopefully this was close enough. Maybe somebody can confirm that they can see this okay. You see provider?
We can.
Okay, thank you. So this whole process starts with this notion of what we call a start event. The assumption we made based on the document provided was the patient was registered and their insurance information has been collected and validated. We show here that there's some interaction with the patient, perhaps collecting information about why they're there, what are their medical issues, and there's an exchange of information going back and forth. We don't know what that is, but we just wanted to abstractly show that there was this exchange, maybe some questions coming to the patient, some answers coming back. But after this task is complete, there is a document that was created, which we called the encounter. I'm going to come back to this because we can also go in here and express the types of data that would be collected as a result of this. This data is then fed into the next task, which is should this patient be admitted. I'm going to come back to this task as well because we can actually go into this and express some of the logic that would be employed to make this decision. I'll come back to after I finish going through the flows. A result of this task is this admissions result document. That document is used to decide, in this task here, the decision was made, should they be admitted or not. This was a flow about admissions. So if in this case they it was decided that they're not to be admitted, then this task ends, which is what this dark circle means, that the process comes to an end. If the process continues, then there's human intervention where they're going to review and gather some more patient information. They're going to update the patient demographics in the EHR. The encounter information will also come into the EHR, and then the provider will enter an order for the patient to be admitted. The admission order will then go into this, what we hear is a service task. This is, we're showing here that the system is, this is the notion that some program perhaps, some system is taking this, maybe it's the EHR, and it's sending on a request down to the authorization system to request an authorization for the procedure that was identified in the earlier tasks. This is where the message is captured. It goes on to the next task. This dark envelope here means that a message is sent. This task is sending a message into the payer and requesting for this particular procedure and diagnosis this patient, what are the rules that the payer will be applying to receiving authentic authorization. So we get those rules back and we feed them into another task, which is here a process of making a decision. It's using those rules. It's taking the admission information that was received from the provider, and it is essentially determining, based on the rules provided, based on the order entered, the patient, is the data that we've collected as a result of the order, is it sufficient to submit, or is there a data quality issue? If there's a data quality issue, we are going to take those rules, we're going to analyze the order and produce a document that expresses what the deficiencies are or issues are in the order that was sent. We're then going to send that back up to the provider. We left the provider here when we requested an authorization. That process for a specific patient moves on and waits here at this gate. So the diamond is a gate. It's a point of making a branch or not a decision. It's a branch as a result of some change in information or some event that's been received. Here we waited for an event to occur, either some issue with remediation or a response for the payer. In this case here, the message that came back was an issue of data quality. So we're showing that there's some intervention by somebody at the system level in the EHR. They're going to address the issues that were identified, and then they're going to resubmit the order. That whole process then repeats. We come back down. We go through all this again, checking the orders, because this is happening for every, you can imagine that for every patient where an order is being created, this is being executed. And the process, an instance of this process could be in any point in the sequence per each patient. So for Jane Doe, they've come in. We're going to get the record, the rules again. We're going to look at what we've got. We're going to check the order again. And then this time, we've determined that the information is sufficient. We're going to run a process that's going to send on that request for authorization down to the payer. The payer receives it. They're using their same rule set that was requested by the system earlier, and they get the authorization. They're going to provide their own analysis. They then make a decision. We feel this is an area that requires further explication and work, but it's a starting point for discussion. So we don't, again, I want to caution, we don't feel this is completely accurate. It's really meant to be illustrative, and we would welcome an opportunity to explore this and then correct it. But nevertheless, based on what we had, the process shows that it is approved. If the authorization is approved, we send that information back to the system that requested the approval that then gets sent on to another task that then sends it up to the provider, which then goes through their process here. If it's approved, then this process is complete. If we find here, I want to bring your attention back to here, when the internal intermediate process submitted the request, it sat here on this task waiting for a response. The notation we're trying to highlight here is we have a timer on here. This is something that would be based on policy. Maybe the process waits 3 hours, maybe it waits 3 days, but if the intermediate process doesn't receive a response for Jane Doe, it's then going to kick the timer off. It's then going to send a new request back down into the payer, you know, essentially saying, you know, what's happening? Why have we not got a response? You know, please give us a response. That's running at the same time all this is running down here. So coming back down, if the request goes through and it's denied, the denial message is sent up, same catching process, task gets that message, sends that up, that message back to the provider. Provider receives the message. It looks and says, sees what the message received was about. In this case, it's a denial. Provider will review the denial. They'll update the patient information in the EHR and then come back around and try to get authorization again. Now, there's certainly some issues there. You know, maybe they decide that they don't want to resubmit this, or they may have to escalate it, but this is as much information we had when we built this process. The last two paths are if they're neither approved but denied, where we're now waiting for a pending state, where in one case it's pending because the data, the payer has decided that the information is the quality of the information was adequate, but they've decided or found that there's something that's incomplete. They require additional information. That message gets sent up. Same process kicks around again. That gets sent back up to the provider. The provider sees that there was a pending status. They intervene and provide the appropriate remediation and then come back around and wait again. And then finally, the last is that it's pending, but per the use case said it was pending because perhaps there was some internal process that needed to be validated or approved and hadn't quite finished yet. And so they're waiting for that to complete before they can make a final approval or denial. And that whole process runs again. The last thing that I want to come back to is if there was an approval, this is per the use case, there's this task where the payer is going to decide whether or not they should audit this particular approval, and they have their own logic on how that might happen. They choose to audit. If they choose not to audit, nothing happens. If they choose to audit, this is a symbol that represents the notion of a throwing process. There can be some other process that's been defined in the enterprise. The catching side of that would be called start audit process, and it would receive essentially a kick to start. All of the data that was provided here would be delivered to that audit process, and then that audit process could start its process of auditing the authorization. The last thing I'd like to come back to is I wanted to show you how we looked at this notion of should a patient be admitted. So we took liberty and kind of said, well, here's an example of how we might show that with further specification using what's called the DMN, decision modeling notation. So if you humor me, think about, well, I'm going to jump into this task. That's the decision task is represented by this little Excel spreadsheet. So I'm jumping into that. And this is the expression of a decision task, and I'll try to zoom in for you a little bit. Decision tasks, the two major elements is the notion of data, which is shown by these oblong figures with a little piece of paper turned down. Let me zoom in a little bit better for you. And it shows that there is a decision being made. I'll move up here. And here, for example, blood pressure is a decision that's being made. The output of this decision feeds the admissions decision, and then the output of all of this is would be some notification of whether the patient should be admitted. What I'd like to show you is that here we went in and put in the demographic data that we, or the structure of the data. And I'm sorry, I can't zoom in any more than this. It's a limitation of the tool. But essentially it's saying that the demographics structure would have a first name, last name, maybe a previous name, middle name, suffix, date of birth, gender at birth, age, race, ethnicity, which is constrained to an enumeration of these types. And it's what I wanted to show is this is a way of also, as part of the process modeling, you can set expectations on the type of data that would be required in order for the process or the decision to execute successfully. So coming and looking at this other data object here, which we call the encounter information, if I open this up in the encounter information, it says we have some health, there's some health information. Do they have hypertension? Do they have kidney disease? Do they have diabetes? It's a very simple structure, just meant to be illustrative. Vital signs, what's their blood pressure? What's their temperature? So this is systolic, diastolic. So this is the information structure that would be required or used by, in this case, the blood pressure decision. So let me step inside the blood pressure decision. Remember, if you can humor me, envision that an instance of this encounter information for Jane Doe would be submitted to this process, this task of making a decision, and this is the decision that it's being expressed. Let me see. I might be able to get this a little closer. Sometimes it'll zoom in for me. Unfortunately, not this time. Okay. Well, what you have here is a table. It each of these rows represent a rule. The left-hand side is the antecedent, the if condition. So, for example, rule one says if the systolic pressure is greater than or equal to 100 and over equal to 180, return hypertension emergency. The second rule says that if the diastolic is greater than or equal to 120, return the same hypertension emergency. The next rule is showing a range where you can say if it's 140 to 179, and so on. This is just meant to be illustrative. We can have very complex rules of if things are in a range, if they're part of a value set. There's different ways you can articulate how the rules should be run, if they should be only one is unique. You can run all the rules and get a collection of things back. But what's nice here is it's a very clean and clear way of setting expectations on, in this case, what would be deemed as a rating for blood pressure. So if you would envision this executing, that value of hypertension would feed into the admission results. The admissions results would then use the encounter information as well as the patient information to make the decision if they should be admitted. The result of that task would be an admission decision or a do not admit decision, and this process would then continue on. Again, this is just meant to be illustrative and show perhaps the art of the possible, show how these methods might be used to help more clearly express the expectations and sharing and elucidating the information more clearly. So that's the end of my part of this. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much, Robert. That was really very helpful. I know when we discussed it in the small group, we had a lot of questions. So I'm going to open it now to the task force. I don't see any hands raised, but if you do have a question and you're in the Adobe meeting, please raise your hand. If you're not and you're on the phone and you have a question, please let me know.
So Cheryl, this is Alex, and so I want to ask you a little bit about the small group discussion that you may have had, in that this is a great model. It's mapping out the various steps of the process by actor and helps us to understand a clear happy path, as well as some of the more complicated aspects, because we all know that prior authorization can be quite multifaceted and take a lot of participants' involvement. So I'm curious, knowing that some of the small group members were unable to make it here today due to family vacations, I'll be curious if you could maybe either Robert or yourself give us some sort of flavor of the questions that you had, but also along the way kind of curious around the patient level at the very top, and noting that function, you know, that whole row is very sort of empty. It's just the existence of a patient. And if there was any, I'm curious to also understand if there was any discussion about maybe wanting to build that out in some way, or even to represent the larger family community around a patient.
So, yeah, the addition of the patient characteristics has not been added. We were going to have an ask in this meeting to engage maybe one of the patient advocates or patient representatives to help us build that out a little bit more. And then we also had talked about potentially working on a denial and appeal so that there's a little more detail on that. But, you know, at this point in time, we didn't want to hold the model. We wanted to, you know, be able to share it, engage it, you know, with the folks from the task force. Some of the topics that we discussed, hold on a second. So I wanted to briefly talk about those. So
while you're collecting those notes or those thoughts, Cheryl, I think it's really a good point in time to call out that this is the first major foray back to the full task force on the business process model. And as we link this idea of the current state complexities of the sort of the front matter we need to do in setting the stage in our report, we'll be able to use this coupled with the other data classes and categories work, guiding principles, ideal state, bundled up with our recommendations to sort of get us the full story, soup to nuts, that we're trying to tackle related to prior authorization. So the goal would be then to get some from today's feedback, enough of sort of a what else do we need in this, and sort of modeling effort. And it looks like we're trying to do the not only have a master model, but we're also trying to do where the denials or the pended sort of dynamics are more called out as discrete models in addition to this?
That's a lot of what we talked about in the meeting that we had in the small group. Also, we discussed, as I already mentioned, the patient, the interactions in the process. And then also there is some questions that the folks had who put this together and did a fabulous job, whether there are any gaps that need to be closed. As they walked through it today and, you know, earlier when we looked at it, you know, the biggest one that I called out was really the patient access and what data are we anticipating as we move to the bigger question of intersection of clinical and administrative data. Does there need to be there for the patient as part of this process, and also that we don't want this to be an exhaustive process. This wasn't meant to do everything, nor were we going to take it the next step and do multiple types of prior auth. We felt like a generic, as they've exhibited it here, is probably the best one for us to use, as long as it had the approval as well as the denial and appeal.
That's really helpful, Cheryl, because I think one of the things that I would love to see after today's call is maybe if we could get an updated version, because I know I'd seen an earlier PDF of this, and there wasn't even a patient layer at the top, so I must have seen a really preliminary version. This is, I think, a huge tool that we can use, and that if we do want to get our members to take a look at it, that hopefully we can get an updated version after today's input is received and infused into the document. And I notice while we've been chatting, there have been a few more hands popping up.
Yes.
May I add something to that? That this, I personally don't feel this is ready for distribution. It requires further discussion with the experts. There are some issues, even as I was walking through, that we didn't address. So, for example, if the message is pending, we really kind of punted. You notice the message just sort of flows up and then comes back around again, but there's no real remediation going back into the EHR. And as you mentioned, there is no interaction back to the patient. This was a first cut, and I would caution against saying this is the answer. I think the ask was, how could you use these methods? And I think part of the decision here is for you all to decide if you do want to move forward, perhaps discussing next steps to advance this model to a level that does fairly articulate what you're trying to achieve before it gets distributed more broadly.
Perfect capstone. Yeah. Thank you.
This is Steve. I might say, so the reason that the person at the very top there doesn't really have much in it is because in the use scenarios, the narrative use scenarios.
I'm sorry, Steve. Is this Steve Brown? I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out who's speaking. Okay. Go ahead, Cheryl. I think she was trying to run those who had their hands up. So I don't know if you're asking a question or adding commentary for further discussion.
I'm adding commentary. Yeah. So what I guess what I would say is, so the reason that there's nothing in the person pool is that in the original scenario, there wasn't any engagement with the person, with the patient, and what would be required to model that out to the next level is someone who's willing to write the narrative of, like, you know, like from the patient's perspective, like what would they do, and add to that so that it can then be modeled out. It was not modeled in its first pass because there was nothing in the use scenario, and Robert's a good modeler, but he's not a good prior auth guy. So,
you can only model as good as your whiteboarding or your details provides. Totally understand, Steve. So thank you for that.
Okay, so why don't we go to the folks that have their hands raised? Alexis.
Hi, thanks. Well, I'm a bit confused in a couple of places. So one, based on what Steve was just saying, we had in earlier groups and as well as in our workbook in the larger group, I had added a lot of narrative in reference to where patient and caregiver are not only engaged but burdened in the process. So I'm not quite sure what happened to that. And as far as small group getting together, I haven't seen or heard anything. Otherwise, I would have gladly given more information, but I had to be asked for it. My other confusion is if we're talking about this looking like current state or if this is what we're calling ideal state, and I guess before my next comment, if someone just answers that, is this flow chart supposed to look like the current burden state or where we want to be in an ideal state?
It's Jim. Robert. This is a representation of the flow that was presented as an example. Again, I think this was just meant to kick the tires, if you will, of these methods and see how something that's in a narrative form might turn into a BPMN model. I don't know that it's meant to be the answer. It was meant to be the red
right.
notes are
so,
what I put in here as I was working through it. So,
so my question is this the current state? Or is this what we're hoping for an ideal state?
Hey, it's Jim Georges. Can I comment on that?
Yes,
please.
Yeah, hey, these are great questions. What we are intending to do is, you know, the task force has done so much work around the data categories and standards for open interfaces, et cetera. And if you remember, we started with kind of workflows. Then we said, let's pivot to the data and the standards. And now we're kind of pressure testing it using Steve's and Robert's model. And so one of the things we wanted to do is validate, right, that, hey, does our model, our data model and everything, how would it support current and future states? And so one of the neat things about this is if you look at the big rectangles that represent, entities or stakeholders, one of the things that this brings out is that at every step of interaction, you could actually we could actually say, well, data has to be transferred from one entity to another, one big rectangle to another, and current states or multiple different future states could be supported by that model we've worked on that spreadsheet. And this brings it out because, you know, we keep saying, go back into the EMR. Does the data go back into the EMR? Well, what we were saying is we don't know that it will just be the EMR. There may be app developers that develop multi-payer apps that interact with the patient as well as providers or their staff as well as multiple payers. And what this could do is actually represent a variety of future use cases to validate our goal. Our goal is like meaningful use, like information exchange for non-clinical administrative. Our goal is to create data standards and standards for communication and open APIs that could support a market of different possible future states and people competing over apps, et cetera, that solve problems. And I just go back to this model because you could actually define out multiple different states. And it could validate that if the focused work of the task force was around data models, open APIs, and transport standards, then this demonstrates it can support a variety of different workflows. So validation, I think, is the key word. And Cheryl and Alex, do you guys, is that how you kind of view this as well?
This is Cheryl, and my answer is yes, and also to be more specific for Alexis, I think that this data model, because it's really focusing on the data and the process, is really what we hope the future will look like, but it's not a redesigned process, if you will, because that's not the role of our work group. We're looking at what we can influence, which is, as Jim just said, and Alex said earlier, you know, we can influence data standards, data classes, maybe some recommendations for automation that currently is not there, or integration of automation, which is why we had, you know, X12 and CAQH Core and others come forward and talk about their efforts. But it's not to necessarily reinvent the process because there's no hook for us to engage with a group to do so. So there may be more innovation that will occur as a result of EMR vendors and app developers having those data standards and having the ability to reimagine the whole utilization management process. And hopefully we'll get into some of those topics when we're talking about the intersection of clinical administrative data. I can imagine, quite honestly, a world where all of the administrative and clinical data is available through one system, and that will enable and allow lots of other things to occur, but that's not what we're dealing with right now, nor is it something that I think is realistic for us to make recommendations towards until we actually have things in place like an integrated data model and then a basis to, you know, talk about those other things. So, yes, this is not complete, and there is more work that needs to be done, and that's one reason why we're bringing it back to this group. And so now this group who's tried to utilize the efforts that we've all put together in the workbooks, but they weren't part of the workbook. So there may be data out there, Alexis, on the patient that, you know, they didn't pick up because it wasn't apparent where they needed to look for it. So, you know, maybe we will, if you're willing, join us for a meeting, and then you can help continue to build out that patient part of the process. And certainly we can try to go in the workbook and seek to find what you've already populated. But I think that's where we are with that. We also have another question from Rich, and then we'll open it up to others. Rich?
Okay. I don't think I got my question answered nor finished my comment, but that's fine. And I was never invited to the group, just so you know. I asked a very basic question, and I still don't have my answer or an understanding, but maybe that's
well,
maybe
the
I
group
can ask
was
Alex
open
further
offline. Every peer who wanted to participate. And basically the people that were invited were the ones who put their hands up. So maybe it was a meeting you couldn't attend. I don't know, but we'll certainly include you in the future.
Hello, are we still on?
Yeah, this is Alex. It went very quiet for me, so.
Yeah, I was waiting for Rich.
Hey,
Well, I'm sorry. I'd like to back up. Rich, if you don't mind for a second, because I feel like I'm a little lost along with Alexis, especially knowing that she had previously raised her hand to be a part of that group. She was taking a hiatus from Guiding Principles group, so there might have just been a little disconnect, and apologize if I contributed that to any way, but I think I'm still of the trying to figure out if this is supposed to be, you know, really the identification for current states that leads us to the ability to then apply our ideal state so we can further validate any like gaps or what it might mean. So I think Alexis is that getting at the crux of your question?
Well, yes. I mean, it goes by basic question again. I'm not saying that we need to change process or reinvent the wheel. That wasn't my question or my suggestion. We're here to find out where the current state is and where we can make best recommendations for improvements in the future. And so I'm confused again as this model is trying to map out what the current state is so that we can more visually see where the issues are that we might make the best recommendations for improvement in the future, or is this an ideal state model on what it could look like in an ideal state should things lead to improvement? And the reason I asked that was because I had comments about what's missing and needed kind of that answer before I provided what's missing. But I will say that regardless of providing right now rather than offline at another date what's missing, if we're talking about data versus engagement, we're still talking about a process where the patient is continually involved and needs to be, because this is not what happens and this is not how the information flows. And they are burdened throughout the process, across that entire line almost. And so I would just say that if this is a current state, there is a lot missing of patients. And if we're talking about ideal state, there is also a lot missing. Aside from just patient comments about what's missing, there's some pieces where, if we're talking again, current and or ideal, pieces about an end point at denial, because that's not what happens and not what should happen at that end point there. So I think there's a lot of places where, yes, I understand it's a working model, and that's what I'm getting at, that it needs to continue to be work on, and the patient and caregiver piece in this is completely lost.
Right. So this is Steve, and let me just comment. I think a great next step would be to take the narrative that was created that this model represents, was just a narrative, right, that Josh made, and edit it, like add the part to it so that it's explicit. And then that can be put back in.
Or we can take the model the way this would traditionally work is you have a first cut and you we create the model, and then we review this with the subject matter experts, and we say, okay, does this express what you were intending in the document provided? And you incrementally go through, you review it, you get feedback, they say, no, this is missing. You really need to, at this point, we should go back to the patient and engage them. Here we need to go back to the system to either update or gather more information. This logic is inconsistent, and it's an incremental iterative process. Usually you start with just a few people that are sort of that know that particular part pretty well, and then as the model matures and the group feels more comfortable, you publish it out and you solicit more feedback, and there's a whole curation. There's even governance and policies about how you manage these models, and they can be used in a lot of ways. One of them is just to spur a conversation and say, this is what we think. Another case is it's actually to derive to some kind of, sort of contracts, how the system should interact. What's the expectation of data coming from one system? What's the minimum amount of data that we need in order to move on to the next system? When the data is pushed across to maybe an authorization, it is an iterative living process.
Right. So I guess I still don't hear an answer of this is an iterative process of what we think is currently happening or what we think should be happening.
I think that would be directed to the authors of the Word document that was provided. I don't know the source of that.
Whoever wants to answer it, we just still don't have the answer.
Yeah, we provided just a simple narrative. So this is Jim Georges talking. So the small subgroup came up with just a simple approval just to demonstrate what the tool could do, current state. So your question is current state. A lot of the other questions you had about, like, where's the patient or anything, we did have rich discussion about that. And decided instead of trying to do another version between last Thursday and today, we would go ahead and let him just show how the tool works with the expectation that next steps would be to do a more future use case, right? So it wasn't
my concern is still back to the basic question. So you say this is what the current state could be. So are we talking about ideal state? Or what we think this is the current state is?
Well, this was an attempt to do the first current state, but it's not even accurate for the first current state. And
that's
fine.
I just needed to hear that this was intended to look like current state. I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, it was, but there was no iteration to perfect it, which is probably causing some of the dissonance.
No, regardless of whether the patient line was in there or not, it was not clear whether it was current or hoping to be ideal.
Okay.
Sure, this is Laura. I do see another, Rich has a hand up, but Alexis, did you have another question or comment before we move on?
No, it just took a really long time to get that answer.
Okay, and should we go to Rich next?
Okay, this is Rich, and I am intrigued by what I think might be the power of this model, but it's too much to digest at first look, and for some reason my screen keeps jumping around, so if I put it into one quadrant to chase down a flow, as soon as I let go of my mouse, it jumps into a different quadrant. So I can't follow the flows easily, but from what I have been able to find, I have been able to see and trace the flows, I would appreciate in this model a lot more navigation markers. I'm not quite sure what entity we're talking about at what point in the pool, like in the provider pool. I'm assuming it's a PCP or something. But then I get confused when we get to the block that asks the question, should the patient be admitted? If we're looking at this through a prior auth lens, I'm not sure why all that process follows, because should patient be admitted is kind of a decision that has been made. But if I'm looking at it as a clinical decision support, then I understand all the process that follows. So I'm not sure what I'm looking at here. And for most prior auth, there's going to be two providers involved for an admission question. The first is, who's the admitting physician? But then there's a potential that may or may not be included in the model of the hospital who will actually do the admitting. So I'm not sure if all the structure to the right of that should patient be admitted, is that going on with at the hospital, or is that still in the, let's call him or her the PCP? And then if you look down to the next lane, the authorization system, PI, not clear whose authorization system that is. Is that the authorization system belonging to the provider in the pool above, or is it the front end for the payer in the pool below? So I just am asking that in one of the next iterations, can we be a lot more clear about who these entities are and what their roles are? So and again, to recap, just in the provider lane, is it the PCP, is it the hospital, and the authorization system? Whose authorization system? Is that internal to the provider before it goes to the payer, or is that the intermediary acting as the front end to the payer, or just what is it? That's it.
Yeah, it's Jim. I can comment about what the intent of the narrative was. So we had a lot of discussion about all the different use cases. You know, there's the durable medical equipment, there's the pharmacy piece, outpatient medical services. And just to demonstrate the model, which was the goal, we decided to just start with the simplest, which is simply a patient being admitted and then an interaction between the hospital and the insurance company or possibly intermediary of the insurance company around authorization, probably concurrent authorization for inpatient versus OBS, and just with getting a simple approval, not to try to tackle all the complex use cases, because you can see how complex this model looks even with the intent of a simple use case. I think then things were added about the outpatient, do they need to be admitted or not? But the intent of our narrative was to say, hey, a patient finds themselves in the hospital then needs to know if the patient's insured, what their benefits are, do they need, you know, what data is needed, what rules, send that data, and then that the reply is given. And that's what the intent was. I think it got a little, things got added along the way. I hope that answers your question.
Well, let me just ask for sure, in the provider pool lane then, that provider is the hospital, not the primary care physician.
Yeah, I'll have to say, because Steve and Robert then took our narrative and then built this, but that was my interpretation, was the provider was the hospital. Is that
right,
correct, Robert?
I had read it as primary care physician, but if I go back and look at it at a hospital, it may look a lot different to me. Okay, but again, back to my point, can we make the labels more specific, you know, for the use case? If it's a PCP, say provider, PCP. If it's the hospital itself, say hospital, inpatient, or whatever. Thanks.
Thank you for that. I don't know, Robert, we're not seeing the model anymore on your screen. It seems to be a bunch of
trouble. Yeah, Cheryl, I'm having the same visual. It's totally grayed out. But I also noticed that Robert said if he could be further of assistance to reach out. I wasn't sure if he was also dropping off at some point or if we were still able to work with him, because I think this is a very fruitful discussion. I feel like the point of bringing it here today was to give it some light of day and get some tire kicking, which is always how we have effective iteration. So I'm hoping that we can stay on this conversation, even if it means we hold off on the brainstorming discussion at this point.
Well,
no, I wasn't dropping. I was just making my contact information available. It's others. I know we were coming to the end of the discussion and just didn't want it to fall off. So
that's very thoughtful. Thank you. I know you may have a lot of contacts now, because I do think that this business process model is going to be a really important piece. And I think understanding from which perch we're viewing it will make a difference. And I think there are definitely notable differences from the primary care versus the hospital kind of point of view. So
I think it's important, though, to just level the intent and purpose of this discussion. It was not my understanding that we were trying to present the answer. More so is as a method to help drive to our documenting and sharing of the artifacts that you all create. So I don't think it was our intent in any way to say that if this is how it should happen. It really is meant to say, here's the art of the possible as a method to express these process knowledge, decision knowledge, data knowledge in a clear, concise, and repeatable way that's based on open standards and open tools.
Right. I think the other thing is that we need to add at this point, Robert, for like Alexis has another question, but the way this group has pretty much worked is we created, and that was Jim and Josh, and others created a Word document that this team worked from. So most of the work was done offline. We had a preview of it on last week, Thursday, and then we're presenting it to you. Again, it's not finished. It was incomplete, and it does need to have additional data added, and we knew that the patient aspect was incomplete as well, and that we needed to have the denial process built out so that there was a denial and appeal. But we knew those things were not going to be ready for today. So what I would suggest to the group is please take a look at what you see is missing, put some words together that we can send to the group that's working on this. Again, they're not working in a group, basically group setting, unless we need to have another meeting about it. But if there are descriptions that can be put together, that's, I think, some more helpful so that they can do some offline work, put some of the model together, and then bring it back for a re-verification, because it's sort of easier to start with something that's already there. And then
would it make also sense to send out that initial narrative? Because I think that that's sort of the foundation, because I think some of us either may have forgotten some of the context or we're not in the iterative process. So like I was sort of envisioning it would be the current state would have been mapped, and that would then give us a second chance to run the future state. But it looks like it was actually more ideal state. It looks like Steve Brown is actually pasting that into the chat box.
Yeah, it's really ugly. Is there a way for me to attach the document we work from? Because a great way to move this forward would be to, you know, see what we work from and then make additions or, you know, notations on that. And because, I mean, like I say, Robert's not a pre-auth guy. He's like, you know, Mr. Yeah. BPM and stuff. Like, doesn't know, and me, heck, I work at the VA. We don't pre-authorize anything, right? So, but that would be really helpful is to get that input in a format where we can understand it in context, you know, so you just mark up the original narrative. Anyone
yes.
that wants to have at it.
Yes, and I think that's what we need to do. So I think what we'll do today is share with this entire group the narrative, and then also if we could get the current version of the process model just so they can actually see it. Some people may still have struggled with the size of the boxes yeah. to be able to read it and follow it, and then ask for input from this group by the end of day, hopefully. I know that it's not a lot of time with the holiday, but if you could provide some feedback by next Monday, then we can have another point in time, not next week or maybe the week after. We need to see what kind of time Robert needs mm-hmm. in order to actually you know, translate that into something. Now we have a few people with their hands raised. So, Alexis, you are first. I'll go with you.
Thank you. I was just going to add before about to the commentary about whether this was hospital being provider or primary care being provider. I think we need to be even more specific than that in the scenario because it looks so different depending upon what that scenario is. And so for example, if we're talking about primary care, it's very different. The process is very different and needs to be different. If you're sitting in a primary care appointment and something urgent has come up and your provider does not want to send you home and wants to directly admit you, that process and flow is going to look different than you're sitting in your primary care or specialist office perhaps and planning for a future admission for whatever reason, for an inpatient procedure, et cetera. And those two flows are going to look different. So I think when we also talk about going back to the narrative, we need to be really clear about what the scenario is, because even to provide further details in the narrative, we all need to be on the same page about what the exact scenario is.
Right. So this is Steve. What I would say is, you know, if there wants to be a group I shouldn't own the narrative, and Robert surely shouldn't own the narrative. But if there's a group of you all that, you know, you're the subject matter experts on this, to come up with a revised narrative that everybody agrees on, then we can take a look at that. You know, I'd like to, this isn't going to be a forever modeling kind of thing, right? I time boxed it originally with some number of hours of effort. So, you know, what's important is to use, you know, have the subject matter experts agree as best they can in advance and let us see what we can do within a reasonable level of effort. And, you know, the discussions about, you know, gee, you should do X or you should do Y, you should take part amongst the committee members and come to some agreement on that.
Right,
Robert trapped in the middle.
But it's to be able to help with that narrative. I'm saying we need a clear scenario for the narrative.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
so,
the example of hospital versus PCP, and if we're talking about PCP, what is the scenario?
I agree. I think what we need to do is finalize the narrative first and agree on what the scenario is going to be. I mean, it's not clear when I went back and just quickly now read the narrative that was sent. It didn't really specify, as you said, Alexis, whether it was a PCP or an emergency room visit, and that process might be different depending on the setting that, you know, the patient presents itself in. So I do think it does help. Unfortunately, I think none of us are experienced, and maybe this is where we can draw on Jocelyn to get more of the characteristics of what we should include in our narrative use case, so it will be more complete when it goes to Robert, so we can use his time judiciously, because as Steve said, he allocated like 20 hours of his time to be doing this, and I don't know where we are up against that, but if we want to get this done and have it be meaningful, we need to make sure that we're being considerate of how much time that's being spent. And really focusing on the narrative, we need to do that first. And we didn't present it to this group, and we probably should have had a group that looked at it before we had them actually starting on the picture. So let's take a pause and see if we can insert that into next week's work. And then we can make sure that we're all in agreement with what that narrative is and then revisit it, if that will work for you, Steve and Robert.
I think that's fine. Like I say, in general, if you can get some agreed upon narrative where, you know, there's for instance, a much better patient rule that wasn't in there at all, and we'll put it in. And then we can eyeball it and we'll see if there's anything that looks like it's overtly missing from the narrative or the, you know, sort of questions, and then, you know, take another pass at it, assuming that it's not gotten entirely out of hand.
Yeah, okay. I think that's what we'll try to do. All right, there are a couple more questions, so can we move on to those as well? We had Jim Juris.
Georges, yeah. Hey there. Hey, because we only have the 20 hours, I think as we do that narrative, do we all have agreement over what problem we're trying to solve by doing this exercise? Because the intent was to, as I understood it, was to take a simple workflow and validate, going back to workflow, that our data model on the spreadsheet we've been working on, you know, how that supports current and future states. And because I don't think, unless we're willing to pay, I don't think Steve and company, you know, 20 hours is probably enough to do one simple example. I don't think we're going to, unless we're planning on hiring them to map out possible future states for each of the use cases, do we all agree on what the purpose of this finite exercise is and how it's contributing to our recommendation?
So to restate what we originally said was we were only going to use this exercise, again, not to make the process perfect, but be able to take our recommendations in ideal state and measure it against there to see whether our recommendations and ideal state and guidelines actually, you know, make sense for the final recommendations of the prior auth. So that was the purpose of it. It was not to create an ideal PA process, as I've tried to state over and over. It's not, you know, that's not what this is for. This is to utilize as a test mechanism against the recommendations that we're making, and it was, you know, because Steve offered these limited hours, we thought visualizing it might actually be more helpful for the group, and it does sound like it's helpful. It sounds like there's some gaps in what we've already done, and again, I think, you know, it does make sense to look at that narrative and really specify out the narrative, because that's going to help us as we're evaluating our recommendations and our ideal state narratives as well.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make
sure
everybody...
We have another... Make a comment. Let's move over to Denise.
Okay, so I was just listening to all of this. It just seems to me like there was some breakdown on communication about the whole purpose of the modeling, and I think the way I understood it when Steve made his offer for some of Robert's time, it really was to illustrate the power of having a visual model to inform us as we're making our recommendations for ideal states. So, you know, I think probably, and I think others have already acknowledged this, including you, Cheryl, that the breakdown was not nailing down the current state narrative and scenario that we wanted to have modeled. So I concur that I think we need to nail that down first, and if we can get a little bit more of Robert's time to model the current state for a scenario that we all agree on, and then take a look at our recommendations for ideal state and where the gaps are in the current model state. So I think I understand what you're proposing, Cheryl.
Thank you. I think that, I mean, yeah, thank you. Rich, you had another comment?
If you're talking, Rich, you're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just thinking that whether it's the model or the narrative, we need to pick a level at which we're examining. So again, back to the provider pool line, we start off generic with the provider, but then we get specific with this is an admission. So if we're going to be at the level of using a narrative or an example with the hospital admission, then we need to be at that same level for the providers. Or if we want to stay generic and just say provider and then model out something, we should call them a generic like patient service instead of a specific hospital admission. So that, I guess that's a challenge for the group. Let's not mix levels, you know, within our diagram or our narrative. Just pick one that's reasonably mid-level. If we go too specific, it's not going to be generalizable. If we go too generic, it's not going to be actionable. So someplace in the middle. Thanks.
All right. That's a good suggestion, Rich. Thank you so much for that. I know we've gone way over, Alex. Thank you.
Oh, Cheryl, it's all good. I think this was such a critical conversation. And, yeah, I think that we've got people's attention, and I think it was well worth the punting, especially knowing that the recommendations group that you and I've been working with has got a good starter point for another fruitful discussion at a future meeting. So I think if we go to public comments, then we can maybe pull back, and maybe you and I can sort of tag team on what that next steps looks like, since I'm slated to do it, but I also want to make sure to get your thoughts on it.
Okay, let's maybe go to public comment real quick. Operator, can we open the line?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pause for our comments. No comments at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Well, so while we're waiting for comments to come in, we'll leave the slide up, but we're on the heels of public comment, planning to go into a next step, and I think this might be a good logical point, Cheryl, for maybe you and I to tag team a little bit, because I think there's been a robust discussion today. We understand that this modeling effort is complex, and it's sort of straddling a couple spheres right now. I think what we realize is that it's working on a narrative model or a narrative of a use case that we probably need to bring back into the fold for the group. And I think if we think about Rich's input, we want to make sure that we've got a narrative that maybe is twofold at a minimum. The first fold would be that inpatient sort of admission dynamic in a hospital. The other one might be more the primary care. I think we know that primary care has a lot of its own complexities, so that might be the two flavors that we might want to go down in the narrative to simplify the current state build out. In addition, we know that this has been a body of work that's been sort of handed off virtually, and I'm amazed at how far it's come and the visualization, and I think it's got we've got a substantial point from which to pivot to bring clarity to the current state, and then to have that sort of flavor aspect of maybe the institutional setting and the primary care setting, and I'm not sure if we want or need at this point to think about a third or a fourth sort of flavor, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. So if we can get that current state, if we can get the narrative out, focus on current states, we can ask people to do a review on that. I think, Cheryl, you were searching for a goal of some feedback by Monday, and that we would then want to possibly have a checkpoint with the full task force on that next week. So far, so good?
All right, so I don't want to interrupt, but the narrative when you read it is not based on the current state. It really is based on an ideal state, and that's what was in the narrative, and I just went back and reviewed it. So
okay.
It wasn't meant to be a reimagined ideal state. It was meant to be, I believe, based on what I see, more of an automated ideal state. So I don't want to confuse the situation now by going back and saying it's current state, because we had a current state model, and it was a model of it, the medical equipment. And the idea behind this was always to have a depicted ideal state that we could use to test the recommendations. So I think we need to remain with that instead of now changing it, because we have limited time that we're going after, but we need to hone the narrative so that it's clear that that's what we're going after.
Okay. I think I will go with that for right now. I'm having a little bit of a challenge getting my brain wrapped around that, because in order to do an effective compare of to an ideal state against what I'm thinking is supposed to be what the ideal state vision was that we already vetted. So I think maybe I'm having a disconnect, because I think what you may be using ideal state in the term of a fully automated mechanism, and that is different. That is only a portion of what we envisioned as the big Uber ideal state, and maybe that is was my disconnect. So am I on firmer ground now with what you're thinking, Cheryl?
Well, I'm only going back to what was originally provided to them, which, you know,
okay. What we can do, we'll get the narrative out. We'll put some clarifications around it so people understand what it is and what it isn't, especially considering the number of our members that were unable to attend today. So we'll do the narrative. We'll also then ask that we'll work effectively with Steve to manage his gracious resource allocation, because I think that the kind of artifact that they're developing is going to be really valuable in our in-state report, so that we can get a little bit of a debrief after this, Cheryl, and kind of wrap our arms around this to help with the document that will come out for members to take a look at. And in addition to the narrative state, if we could get some sample visual that our PDF version of what we were looking at, obviously labeled, you know, work in progress, that would help people if they could look at the narrative with the actual graphic, the graphical representation of what we've walked through today, because I think those two pieces will help folks. And then what we can do is we'll get that out, we'll ask for feedback, and we'll accommodate likely some changes in our plan for next week. And to that point, let me do two things. One, ask Lauren and the operator if we had any public comment. And two, if not, could we go to the next step slides?
I don't think there are any additional comments, Alex.
Thanks very much, Lauren. So what we'll do is we'll adjust next week to accommodate kind of a circle back around on this topic, and so that we can get some agreement among the task force and give very clear guidance to the next round of modeling effort. Anything else that we want to talk about at this point, Lauren or Cheryl?
No, I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to have to send out to the group whatever our ask is for their input for the next meeting. So that will have to come.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you to everybody as we roll into 4th of July weekend. I hope everybody has a great opportunity to enjoy time with family and friends over the weekend in whatever way you're able to do that in social distancing times. And we thank you for your participation today. Be well, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.